We are holding on Tessie's IA Bays about 12 or 15 lines from the bottom, about the 2 dots. The line begins Zaire. 8 lines from the end of the narrow lines. Okay. So going back now to what we started discussing in the Mishnah about you find a shtar, you're not supposed to return it, depending whether it has a chayas or not, as we discussed in the Mishnah. We talked about that. We got off tangent and talked about a chayas for a couple of blocks, and then yesterday we started talking again about the matter of returning shtaris. So, another din in this connection. If somebody finds an IOU in the street,
it's a new case we're studying.
There's a new case. It's related. I mean, it's all talking about this case of finding shtar.
We're
continuing with more details about it. So you find a shtar choyv in the street, even though there was a henpik written in it, which again, a henpik is that Beis Din has looked it over and certified that it's valid, that it really is, that it is, first of all, the fact that there's a henpik indicates that it's a genuine shtar, that's not forged.
Henpik, what's the word the name comes
from? It comes from the Shodosh Nopak, which means to go out. It's a certification that comes out of Beis Din. So even if there's a henpik in it, which tells us, first of all, that it is genuine, it's not forged. Number two, it tells us it was actually used to borrow with. It's not one of these cases of cost of lilvis veloy lava, where you wrote intending to borrow and you didn't borrow yet. So even if there's a henpik written in it, lo yachzir lebaylan, you should still not return it to the owner, meaning to the malach.
That's
chiddush. Well, wait. So lo Rabbi was telling us that in the name of Rabbi Yishma. Tosfos discusses over here, are we talking about a case where the loiva does not admit that that he actually borrowed the shtar yet, so then maybe you shouldn't return it, maybe you shouldn't return it because maybe it was paid off, but as opposed to if we were going to say it that way, maybe if he admits that it was valid, then
it wasn't paid.
But if he admits that he hasn't paid it yet, the only possibility that we could worry about maybe is knunia, again, that they might be playing a trick on third parties. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan is not concerned about that. On the other hand, we're going to have a Gemara later on Yitzayin Amar Aleph that we're going to learn in a bit that talks about a possibility that maybe you're trying to reuse the same shtar again. So Tosfos discusses that there may be two different Amaroyim. Here we have a Rabbo saying in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and later we're going to have Rabbi Kahana saying in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and they may hold different views of what Rabbi Yochanan himself held.
It could be Knuya, and it could be...
So there's a few different possibilities with a shtar, right? There's a possibility that it was paid off, and there's a possibility of Knuya.
You might use the same shtar again to borrow.
Yeah, or that you might use the same shtar again to borrow, right. So Tosfos says, this that we're saying over here is according to Rav Bo. And the implication is that we must be talking about that the loiva does not admit that it is valid. So the only reason why lo yachzir is because you're concerned that when he says not valid, maybe in other words he paid it off already. Fine, there's a henpik on it that tells us it's genuine. It tells us he borrowed with it. Still doesn't mean that it wasn't paid off already. As opposed to maybe Rav Kahana, who later on in the sugya was going to tell us a somewhat different thing in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, would say that over here the din would apply even if he is moida, but the problem would be knunya.
Yeah,
so there's two different, even
if it's henpik, right?
Even if it's a henpik, because it's still part of the possibility, it was paid off, and now the loiva admits that it wasn't paid off. The loiva falsely claims that it wasn't, and then there's going to be knunya. So it's just two different ways of looking at why maybe we shouldn't return.
It was paid off, it cannot be knunya.
Sure they can. He claims it was paid off. It really wasn't. They're going to... No, so...
It really was.
No. Right, no. No, you're right. If the loiva says that it was paid off, right, of course, there's no possibility of knunya, right. Then the only other possibility is what we're going to talk about later, that he might be trying to reuse the same shtar. Right, okay, sorry, that's what it was, yeah.
Right.
Okay, so Gemara continues. Now, needless to say, this din of Rabbi Yochanan would apply if there's no henpik in it. Because then you have yet another possibility. They may have written the shtar intending to borrow and not actually borrowed with it yet. So then for sure you can't return it. El afilu kotzav by henpik. But even if there is a henpik written in it, or mayaniu demakuyam, namely, in other words, that there was a kiyum done on it, they certify that it is valid and that it really was written and that the loan actually took place. Nevertheless, lo yachzir d'chashin al peirayin, because there's still the possibility of that it may have been paid off.
Even if it was written, maybe we didn't use it yet.
No, that's once there's a henpik in it, we know that it was already used.
Oh. Yeah. A henpik is a certified shtar that has been used?
A henpik is the malzah will go to Beis Din and bring the shtar and say, I need it certified that this is really a valid shtar, that's not foolish. Or what have you. So you have the five different ways that you can certify it. You recognize the Adim's signatures, right. Or you have other Adim come and testify, or they write whatever, however the exact way.
But the Beis Din certified.
And then Beis Din writes on it, we have checked over this shtar, we find it to be valid, and we were sitting here with a Beis Din, and we found it to be valid, and they sign their
valid
in the sense that it doesn't matter. No, well, if it was after, it has to be before payment. Obviously,
right.
It was after payment already. The malva has no business having it in hand. Like we said yesterday, it should have been ripped up. So, Eisver Rav Yumi Rabbo. So Rav Yumi asked on Rabbo. The next Mishnah says, or later on in the parak, it says, which quoted this yesterday, Kol Maisa based in Hareza Yachzer. Any Maisa Beis Din should be returned on the face of it. This is a Maisa Beis Din. A henpik is an example of Maisa Beis Din.
In front of who?
If you have a shtar, that is a Maisa Beis Din, we're saying you should return it.
Return it to who?
Return it to the Malva. No, to the Malva.
To the Malva.
So therefore, if there's a henpik, you should return it. Omalei says to him, Yumi, my son. He wasn't really his son. He's just saying it as an expression of endearment. Loiko Maisa based in Shavim. Not all kinds of Maisa based in are on an equal level. No. The case that we're talking about over here is that this loiva already has a chazaka of being a denier, meaning he already one time previously falsely claimed that he paid off the shtar when we bring evidence that he didn't. Therefore, at this point, we don't believe him to say paraiti anymore. That's the case when it's talking about kol ma'isa beis din hareza yachzer. Given that, again, all Gemara is taking the view, we're not worried about knunya, we're not worried about reusing the shtar, we're not worried about any such things. The only possibility is that the shtar was paid off. So if under ordinary circumstances, if the loiva says, I paid it off, fine, don't return it to the malva, because if it really was paid off, how can you give it to the malva and allow him to collect it again? The henpik, that's the point. When he's a kafran, then at that point, you return it, because then at that point, he's only going to be believed to say that I paid it if he does it in the presence of Aiden, if he pays in the presence of Aiden.
So wait a minute, we return it, and so do we wait until the Aiden certify before we...
No, so one second. If the shtar was lost at this point, the shtar was lost and now it's found. Is there a henpik on it or is there not?
Right.
If there's no henpik on it, we have the chlal problem. The loiva can claim almost anything about it. Where does the henpik? The only possibility at this point we're assuming is that the loiva can claim it wasn't paid. Well, if he's a kafran, we're not going to believe that. Therefore, go ahead and return it to the malva. Since it's maisa based, and since there's a henpik on it, and we're not going to believe the loiva to say that it was paid, go ahead and return it to the malva.
Let me ask you a question. Whatever he says, we don't believe in. Because
not whatever he says. If he's a kafran on paying it, if he would have claimed that, for example, that it's forged. No, if he would have claimed that it's forged, okay, now that there's a henpik, he can't do that anymore. Before
right.
There was a henpik, he could have. And besides, and anyway, Omar Rava, so Rava says, what do you mean? Mishum Duhosa Kafran Chada Zimna Tulei Parakwa? What does that mean? Because he's one time, we say that he's a Kafran, does that mean that he's never going to pay it again? Eventually, he's going to pay it at some point. So, if there's reason to be concerned that the shtar might have been paid off, so if he's not a kafran, obviously we should listen to that and not return it to the malva. Even if he is a kafran, though, fine. How can you you're always going to say just return it to the malva?
Maybe it's true.
No, Fraket, the question is the question is like this: that if we're Fraket, if you're going to tell me that only in the case of a kafran we don't believe him, so what does that amount to? So in a regular case when he's not a kafran, just because the malva lost the shtar, that's it, he ends up losing out, the guy can claim paraiti without any evidence at all. And in fact, Tosfos points out, the very fact that, the very fact that the malva lost it sort of shows that it may have been paid off already, otherwise the malva would have been expected to be more careful with it. Fine, once it's paid off already, he gets careless with it, but so yeah. No, you can't explain the Mishnah like that, like Rav Abou is saying, that Kol Ma'aseh Beis Din is talking about a regular shtar chayv that has a henpek on it, but the guy is a katran. No, it has to be talking about shtar chaltosa v'adrachta, like we talked about yesterday, where shtar chaltosa, where you have a shtar that the Baal Chayv is given after he finds karka that he's going to seize in payment to the debt. They write him out a shtar that now you're the owner of this karka. That's shtar chaltosa. Adrachta is that he has the right to go looking for karka to take in payment to the Chayv. Those are the kinds of things. As we said yesterday, there's no issue of piroin with those because, as Rava pointed out yesterday, with those kinds of things, even if the loiva afterwards pays off the debt, you expect him to tell the malva, okay, write me a new shtar or write me a receipt, as the case may be. And if you didn't, that's your problem. As opposed to the case as opposed to a regular shtar Chayv, you don't have the ability to do that. You don't have the ability to say, I'm not going to pay you. You do have the ability, but the guy, you could pay, and the guy could say, okay, I don't have the shtar right now, I'll give it to you later, or whatever.
So we're switching to that scenario because the previous scenario is not
because
plausible.
We can't, not that it's not plausible, but Rava says, because what's the logic that you're going to say, unless the guy's a katran, we would believe him without any evidence to say that he paid, why shouldn't we?
In all other cases, we...
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like we're saying only if he's a katran do we return it. But then why should that be?
Whenever Chaltoya can give me the shtar, I don't have that in the house, I'll give you later.
What?
You could pay him.
No, that's the thing. With a shtar Chaltoya, he said yesterday that he can tell him, after all, a shtar Chaltoya, essentially it amounts to the field has been sold to this guy. So you want to buy it back, you're entitled back to it, Shabbat Tisa Yoshabat Tov, write me a new shtar.
Adrachta, not
Chaltosa. Yeah, that's by Chaltosa. By Adrachta, okay, Tosfos points out in the previous part of the sugya that maybe we shouldn't be goris Adrachta taka for that reason, because an Adrachta, okay, it's still an open thing. The guy wasn't even zoicha in the karka yet. Why should an Adrachta not be considered b'nei peroin either? So Tosfos says maybe because Tosfos explains maybe based on a gemara that we're going to have later on in a market, that as soon as the malva has the Adrachta, he can already start eating peiros from the field, according to one opinion. So therefore, in that sense, the Adrachta is. So therefore, in that sense, once he has the Adrachta, he already has a certain right on the field. Okay. Anyway. So Rava says the point is that we're not talking about a regular shtar choy with a henpik. We're talking about a shtar chaltos of adrachta, something that's to begin with written by Beis Din, and something that, as we said, is not b'nei peroin. There's no possibility that if it was really paid off, that the loiva wouldn't have something to prove that, a shtar of his own to prove it. V'chid Rav Zeira, like Rav Zeira explained it yesterday. And now the Gemara says a kafran, however, also the yodan. Since though we did mention this concept of kafran, since we're talking about it, name of Emil, so let's talk about that a little. Let's tell a din about this concept of kafran. So Amr of Yosef Amman Yumi Amr of Nachman. You have like this. Now we talked about in Baba Kama, there's two stages of the psak din, based in Paskins and Dini Mominus. There's one where they tell him, Chayav Atalitinlo, you are obligated to pay him. Meaning they didn't actually, they're saying that we've decided, you know, the halacha is that the halacha is that you're chayav to pay him. But they didn't actually tell him yet explicitly, go pay him. Then the next stage is they tell him, pay tenlo, go give him. So, Omruloi, say tenlo, if they tell him, go and give it to him, that they actually ordered him to pay up. But Amar Paraiti, and later on he says, I paid it, Neman, then we believe him. We make him swear, Shuasethis, Midrabanan, but we can believe him. Therefore, Bom Malva Lichtov, therefore, if at that point the Malva claims that he wasn't paid off yet, and he asks Beis Din to write him an Adrachta, Ein Kosvin Renosim Lo, we can't write it and give it to him, because so far we have reason to believe this loiva that he really paid off.
Was a proof. He had witnesses. The word.
You don't need witnesses. You don't need witnesses.
When you pay, then you take your star back.
Not necessarily. Like we said yesterday, the Malva himself could say, "I don't have the star available right now. I'll give it to you later." Whatever. On the other hand, Chayev Atalitim.
Once he swears,
then we accept his claim that he paid. Chayev Atalitimoy. On the other hand, if Beis Din only told him you're chayev to give to him, the din is that you have to give it to him, but they didn't yet tell him that you go and give it to him. Then, v'omer paraiti einanem, and then if he says paraiti, we do not believe him. We don't even allow him to swear a shvur tesis. Rather, Rashi says what we do is in that case, we use another takana of the hachamim, that in this case, the other party, meaning the malva, can swear that he didn't get it yet and collect it.
So that's in the case where...
They said chayev atal litamai. Because, again, chayev atal litamai is only the first stage of the psak din, where they told him the din is that you're chayev, but they didn't actually tell him yet, go do it. Say tenloi is actually go and give it to him. So once they tell him go and give it to him, we assume that he did it. Therefore, Shavuot Tesis is enough to establish that he did it. When they told him chayev atal litamai, Rashi says the logic is, since the guy had the Schleppens based in the first place, you can assume that he's not going to be so quick to pay until they actually tell him in so many words, say 10 words. So therefore, you can't believe him with any kind of shavur that he actually did. And therefore, at that point, if the malva wants you to write an adrachta for him, claiming that he didn't pay, then they can write one and give it to him. There's a couple of other explanations in Rishonim, by the way, about Koisman Renoisim, like what it means exactly. The Rambam, and I think also the Rif, understands it to mean Koisman Renoisim, like as in write out for the Malva the details of the Tainus, of the Tainus back and forth. So what would be the problem with writing that in one case versus the other? The problem is that Ashba explains effectively what that would do is we're talking about over here a milva where there's no shtar. So what are you doing? You're going to take a milva al peh and convert it into a milva b'shtar. You can't do that.
If what?
If you, the Rambam, and I think also the Rif, understand the Koisman Renoisnin to be not that we're talking about writing an adrachta, like Rashi says, but rather we're talking about writing out the claims, the claims and counterclaims, the record of the discussion in Beis Din.
If there's no shtar at all,
if there's no shtar at all, then that's the problem that Ashba says is that would amount to converting a milva al peh into a milva b'shtar, and Beis Din doesn't have the right to do that.
So you need Adim in that case, don't you?
You don't need Adim for a shtar per se, but
a shtar. If you don't have a shtar,
So he has Adim that he lent the guy money.
He has Adim that he lent.
But so what? If you lend a person money with Adim, the halacha is you don't have to pay him back with Adim.
No. You've paid already.
Yes, so therefore that's the same thing. He says paraiti, after they told him say tenloi, we can assume that Hitaka did listen to Beis Din. Therefore he paid swears as sure as this. Therefore at that point, if the Malva still claims, I'm sorry, but he didn't pay me, we can't take that Milva Alped convert it into a Milva Bashtar by writing out all the
we
tell the Malva, look, the guy swore sure as this. That's it. You don't really have any more recourse. As opposed to if you only yes, as opposed to if he said chayiv atalit and loy danyet. The first stage is chayiv atalit and loy is the malva would have to swear at that point that he didn't receive it yet, because we can't assume that he paid it yet. Then Beis Din will tell the loyva say ten loy, go give it to him. And once they tell him that, if after that the malva still claims that he wasn't paid, at that point the loyva swears a shvur tzedek. Chayiv atalit and loy is when they first pass in the din. When they come to Beis Din in the first place, the malva brings his evidence, or his edim, or what have you, that he lent it to this person money, and Beis Din looks over the situation and says, okay, chayiv atalit and loy, the din is you have to pay him back.
First stage.
Yeah. Rizvin Mishmed Rav Nachman, I'm a bein say tenloi, bein chayiv atalit and loy, v'alma paraiti nemo. No, actually, whether they told him say tenloi, or whether they told him chayiv atalit and loy, either way, if he says paraiti, if later on he says I paid it, nemo, then we do believe him. And bom malva lichta, and koitzim reisim loy, and therefore, if the malva is asking for a written document, and the drachta, according to Rashi, or writing a document in the court proceedings, according to the Rambam, then you can't give it to him. Mephoshim say the reason is because even though it's true technically there is a difference between chayiv atalit and loy and say ten loy, the fact is people don't think of there as being much of a difference. When Beis Din says you chayiv, it amounts to in people's minds it amounts to the same thing as saying go give it to him. So therefore, ela ikila falugi hocher de ikila falugi. No, rather if you're going to make a distinction, the distinction is rather as follows: omrulit say ten loy. If Beis Din told him say ten loy. Later on, he claims that he paid. There are Edim who give Edus that he did not pay him.
Okay.
Let's leave out the Machoz of Omer Paraiti. The Maharam, and the Maharam takes it out several times on this Omer. We're going to have that thing. So wait. At that point, he has a chazaka of being a denier on that moment. That's why we brought this thing in. Because we said, since we're talking about a kafron, let's talk about a din of kafron. Here we have an example where he's a kafron for that moment, and therefore we will not believe him anymore to say paraiti unless he does it in the presence of Adin.
Because the Malvi brings the Adin that he didn't pay.
That he didn't pay him. Now, what's the situation? Rashi explains like this, that if the Malvi sued him in Beis Din and told him that right there in front of Beis Din, he says, "Nu, pay up," and he didn't pay up. He didn't pay up right there. Not in front of Beis Din. Sorry, in the presence of Adin, the Malva has been they left the Beis Din shtibble. The Beis Din had said, "You're chayav to pay. Say 10 months." So now, in the presence of Adin, the Malva turns to the lawyer and says, "Nu, where's my money?" If the guy, Rashi says, if the guy doesn't pay right there, if the guy doesn't pay, since he had the chutzpah in the presence of Adim to go against what Beis Din says, then at that point he becomes a kafron.
Many what in the front of Adim?
He doesn't pay. He refuses.
He says nothing.
Rashi just says that the loy proy, he didn't pay him.
Which is to pay?
Well, wait. So a lot of Rishonim ask on Rashi, what do you mean, just because he didn't pay at that time makes him a kafron? He didn't have the money at that time, let's say. So therefore, they explained it. So, okay, as far as what Rashi would hold, they talk about that, yeah, maybe it means not that he didn't just not pay, but he said, I'm not going to pay. He said, I paid, or whatever, either way. Hayes laver al pi Beis Din, Rashi says, in the presence of Adam, he had the chutzpah to violate what Beis Din says. He based and told him to pay, and he's claiming, yeah, regardless whether it's he's saying I'm paying, I already paid, or I'm not going to pay, or whatever. Yeah, it has to be that he said I already paid. Yeah,
right.
Whatever. Okay.
Right.
Most of the other Rishonim learn rather that the situation is that he claims, for example, I paid him on a certain day in a certain place, and the Adim comes sort of like they make him sort of like Hazama, except not really Hazama because he's not
that's
an Adim, but they tell him Imanu Ayisem, you were with us someplace else on that day. That would make him a kafra, man. On the other hand, so that's if he says, say 10 months. On the other hand, if he tells him, if the Beis Din tells him, and he claims that I paid, and Adim testified that he hadn't yet paid, and then he claims that I paid, then loyhos a kafron loyse moment. That does not yet make him a kafron on that money. We still allow him to swear his shvor tesis later on once they tell him say ten loy.
The stage ten loy is becoming a kafron, but not at the stage of
chayav atalit. Right.
Why?
Because they didn't give him a full psak yet. To that extent, we do make a distinction between chayav atalit and say ten. Yeah. Because at this point he's just trying to push it off. So because he figures, I don't have to pay yet until the Rabbanon themselves only said chayav atalitzimoy, and fine, that's the din. However, let them look more carefully into it, and maybe they may change their minds or whatever. When they say ten loy, that's different. That's definitive. Yeah.
And therefore, he's not yet
a kafron, and therefore when it comes to the point of say 10 loy, if at that point he claims part IT, then we can allow him a shvor.
How long after the
whenever they say 10 loy, and then afterwards at some point later he says I paid, yeah. Another din in this connection about a kafron. If one person says to the other, "You owe me a mona," the other one says, "I don't owe you anything." There are edim that he does owe him that money. And then afterwards he goes and says, "I paid it." At that point he has a chazaka being a kafron on that money, and again you can't believe him to say paraiti unless he did it in the presence of edim.
Mona li biyad means you owe me money.
Mona li biyad means you owe me money.
This is all from Aiden.
There is a point actually as far as the first one where he says Ein l'chabiyadi klum, that it's brought in the Noitz Kalim on Shulchan Aruch, that it has to be in the presence of Beis Din.
that he says, because it's just, even if it's just in the presence of Edim, fine, a person doesn't always save his, a person sometimes saves his good argument for Beis Din. The fact that he just said it, even though it's in the presence of Edim, doesn't necessarily mean
anything. And if instead of saying,
if he said, Ein Lecha B'Yadi something, then he'd be a
Mitzvah. No, instead
of Par, he'd be Mardi Mitzvah.
No, Ein Lecha B'Yadi Klum, and he says Parati. It's the same?
First, he's saying, Ein Lecha B'Yadi Klum, in the sense that I don't owe you anything, as in, I paid, or Ein lecha b'yadi klum is I never borrowed from you. There are edim that he did borrow from him because of am paraiti, and now he's saying paraiti. He also kafra lo is a moment because the very fact that he claimed he never borrowed, and the edim say that he did. Yeah, kiha, as we have a case, the shabsoi
bread is called a kafra.
A kafra means a denier. Because he's a denier. We know that he's a liar now. We know we established he's a liar based on Edim.
No, but he's saying he never borrowed. The Kafran is saying he paid.
Same difference. Kafran just means that he made a claim which is contradicted by Edim. Where, unless we have reason to say, like we said before, Shtemuti go to Kamashtamit, that he's just trying to stall for time with this knot. With this knot. If he was trying to stall for time, he would have said, I don't have the money right now, or whatever. He wouldn't have said, I never borrowed. As we have the case of Shabsoi, the son of Rabbi Rinas, middle of Yudzayin Amud Aleph.
Toward the top.
It's about two-thirds of the way down the narrow lines. Kosef lo l'kalse itzko de milsa b'ksubasa. He wrote for his kala a fine woolen cloak in Huxuba. It was part of the Nichset Sein Barizel. So he was the Oriv for the Huxuba. So it was written in the Huxuba that she's bringing this property into the marriage. And if her husband dies or divorces her, then she's going to get back the value, the full value of this thing. And this Shabsoi was the Oriv on the Huxuba.
Meaning
he was a guarantor. The guarantor, if the husband doesn't have the nechasim to pay it off, then he'll pay it on his behalf. The kiblale, and he accepted that Shabsoi was just he's the father-in-law. Yes, he was doing it on behalf of his. He was the oriv on behalf of his son. Yeah, it's not the only example. There's other examples in the Gemara where you find that fathers were oriv for their sons for the ksuba.
Really? Yeah. It was a minhag.
I don't know if it was a minhag, but yeah, but there's a few cases in the Gemara. Then she lost her ksuba. He says to her or to them, I never took on myself to guarantee this cloak. He denied it.
The father.
The father. It's Shabsoi, the father of the chassan. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Hello. Also, Sadi v'Amri ain't kosovla. Yeah. Then Edim came and said, that he did actually write it in the ksuba. Well, so if Amalahu Pratia. Then he claimed and said, okay, it was written in the ksuba, but I paid it off.
Call me by lie. Now I say, I paid.
Also, Kamei did a priya, so the case came to the priya. Amalahu Chzak the kafran la'ose itzala. You are officially a kafran as far as that cloak. You cannot be believed anymore that you paid it off as a nifsa said barzal unless the Edim. No, we have an actual example of the
ksuba. But he denied that.
To illustrate an actual example of how it happens. Also, you shouldn't think maybe a ksuba is different because maybe whatever. Because maybe she didn't put out money and he didn't put out money by ksuba. Maybe it's different. You know? Okay, whatever.
Why does this happen one time without the status of a
shatan? Because generally we say, just that we learned earlier in Terek, usually choshed amamoyner is not choshed ashevuasa. Usually just because somebody is choshed, I'm taking money that's not his, does not mean he's choshed ashevuasa. It's a pretty serious thing. But for this particular thing, we're gonna say that once he's a kafran on it, then that's it. We can't allow him to get out of it with a shavua anymore.
But he can do other shavuas?
But he could do other shavuas, yeah.
But he doesn't have a ksuba, so maybe he paid and took the ksuba.
No, because they were still married, the pastors. I don't know.
By the way, it was written the ksuba, but she doesn't have the ksuba.
Okay.
But she doesn't have anything.
Right, so.
Fine, but there are edim that. There are edim that it was written. The fact that. So if he hadn't denied the chachila that was written in the ksuba, then that would be different. Right, he could have claimed paraita.
No,
right. But the fact that he.
He denied it made him believable.
He
denied him in the edim case, proving that he was wrong.
Yeah.
Then he said he paid.
Yeah. So if he said he paid first, he could have gotten away with it.
It doesn't rule out the fact that she met her wife, but the fact that he denied.
All right.
A similar din. If somebody is chayav a shvua to somebody else, va'omer nishbaiti, he claimed I swore, va'edim edim oitzer shaloi nishba, and edim come and say he didn't yet make that shvua. Again, let's take out the b'chaz of omer nishbaiti. It's in parenthesis. Huchsa kafron oitzer shvua, that he has a chazaka of being a kafron as far as that shvua, and we can't allow him to swear that shvua.
But if he did a shvua, it'd be by best people would have him with no.
Well, that's amrua kamed Rav Abo. So they said the statement of Rav Oven to Rav Abo. Amaluhu mistabra milsi. Rav Oven shnei chayav shvua based in. It's logical to say that this statement of Rav Oven only applies if he was chayav shvua in based in, and then claims that he did the shvua when he really did. But if it was that he had voluntarily taken a shvua on himself, sometimes you can have. That one person claims something from the other person, and the nitzvah says, fine, you know, I'll swear to you without even going to Beis Din, you know, I'm yeah.
Informal.
Yeah. Afterwards, if he brings Edim and says, okay, swear in front of them, and he says, and he doesn't want to, and later on he comes to Beis Din claiming I already swore, Neman, then you can believe him. Because of it, indish to mikri va'oma. Because it can happen that a person just says something, and then afterwards he rethinks it and says, you know what? If based in wasn't mechayev me, if I was just mechayev myself, I'm not obligated to. I'm not obligated. You can't hold me to that. So
if
that's
he swore without AD.
He didn't actually swear in the end, but he's claiming that he did. But the fact that he wasn't obligated by based in, the fact that he just voluntarily obligated himself, means that he can get out of it easily. As it actually says, he's not being stubborn, he's not disobedient to Beis Din, it's not that he's just trying to push it off. Because the fact is, he was never mechuyev in Beis Din in the first place. Exactly that. So Reuven says to Shimon, you owe me money, and then Shimon says, fine, I'm willing to swear that I don't.
Well, they do whatever.
Yeah.
Without any doing.
Yeah. They brought this case back to Rabobin, and he says to them, I'm no Nami based in Amri. Yes, as a matter of fact, I was also talking about only the case where he's Chayiv and based. And I thought I wasn't talking about the case where he's just Chayiv himself. Yeah. Itma Nami, and in fact, they said also, more explicitly, so this is adding to the previous statement, explicitly saying the word based in. And he claims that I swore, and Edim claimed that he didn't swear. Then at that point, he's a kafron as far as that shvua, and we can't allow him to take that shvua anymore. He's going to have to actually pay. Okay, so now that finishes the whole topic of kafron. So the bottom line is, if a person is making a claim that is contradicted by Edim, he's a kafron unless we have reason to say Shtemuti Hoda Kamashtamet, that he's just trying to evade the thing rather than just trying to push it off rather than trying to deny it. Yeah. Now getting back to finding shtaris. Amr of Asi Amr of Yechna. Hamoit shtar choiv bashuk, the cost of a hentik. You find a shtar choiv in the street and there's a hentik written in it, like the case that we described before. But here there's a twist. The cost of is manik boi b'yoyim. The date on it is today. Then yachziru labaylim. Then you can return it to the malach. Why? Imishum kasav lulus loylava. Are you worried about he might have written it intending to borrow and he didn't borrow it yet? Can't be. Hakasav by henpik. There's a henpik in it. There's not going to be a henpik in it unless the malva and the loyva were both present and based in. That's the only case where based in will certify a shtar as we look at the kama. Then they both agreed. Yeah. Imishum piroin. Are you worried about that? And obviously you can't worry about that forged because again there's a henpik. Imishum peroy, you know, you're worried it might have been paid off. L'priya b'asyoy m'loy chashin, and we're not worried about that it may have been paid off on the same day that it was issued.
That could have been done.
Wait, Amalero, that's exactly Rav Zera's question. Amalero, Rav Zera, l'rasi, miyomer Rav Yechanan, achi. Are you telling me Rav Yechanan said that? Ha'atu de'amet m'shmeid Rav Yechanan. Didn't you yourself say in the name of Rav Yechanan, you, Rav Asi, yourself, say in the name of Rav Yechanan, shtar shalovaboy upray, if you borrowed with a shtar and then you paid it off, ain't a choiz of a lovaboy, you're not allowed to again borrow using the same shtar, because the shibud of it is already nimchal, has already been cancelled, has already been suspended. Once you paid off the first milva, then effectively what you have is, effectively what Rashi says is what you have is a milva al peh. You don't have a valid shtar. The Sneh, by the way, discusses the Sneh on Shulchan Aruch, discusses a bit, are we talking about then
He brings from the Lavush that it would mean that the shtar is completely possible. You can't use it to collect even from Bnei Chorin. And the Smeh himself says, I don't agree with that. You can't use it for Mishabodim, but you could use it for Bnei Chorin. So in that sense, it's still as if there was no shtar, because even without a shtar, you can also collect from Bnei Chorin. But not he says not like the Lavush, that it would be completely possible, the shtar. I mean, when you have a machlokas like that among Achronim, there's not, you know, and it's, you know, there's not really any higher authority to appeal to. But yeah. Now, what's the point? Amos, you have to ask, when are we talking about that you might be trying to reuse the shtar? Ilem l'macha or l'yomachara? Are you talking about the next day or the day after that? Yomachara, by the way, Rashi points out, usually it would be yomachara, meaning another day. It's just a short way of saying the same thing. Anyway, yeah, whatever, the next day, the day after, my area, Shikar Nimkol Shibur, why do you have to bother mentioning the fact that the Shibur has already been canceled? Typically, the Avalei Mukta, you have a different reason you can't use the Shtar. It would be a predated Shtar. Right. If you use the Shtar to borrow on Sunday, and it's expired, on Monday it's expired, it's not. We learned in a Mishnah, which we quoted the other day, Shtori Chayv HaMukdom and Bzolim, that a Shtar Chayv that's predated is possible. You can only use it on Sunday, right? So of course it would be possible. It must be that you're talking about on the same day. So you're borrowing on Sunday, paying back on Sunday, and then trying to use the same shtar again on Sunday.
So it is possible.
Alma pari in shibiyoma. So you see that people do pay sometimes on the same day. Now, by the way, I mean, the Rashba talks about, I mean, the Gemara could have answered that, look, you also have the concept of shtar chayv hamo'ucho. You can have a post-dated shtar, which is possible. So you could conceivably have, let's say, a shtar that's post-dated by a month, let's say. You use it today. You pay off the debt sometime during the
date.
Date post-dated, yeah. You date it, let's say, a month ahead or whatever. So fine, you borrow with it now, you pay with it later, and then you're in it. It could have, but it's an unusual thing to do that. I mean, usually, for one thing, a malveh is not going to want you to write such a shtar to make things worse for him as far as the shibud. So we're not worried about a possibility like that yet. So that's the question. In other words, do you see that people sometimes do pay their loans on the same day? Yeah. Amalei said, Abasi answers him, you're right. Be kamin of le pari klal. Fine, I didn't say they never pay at all. All I mean is it's not a common thing that people pay on the same day. Therefore,
you're paying a sefer to write a whole thing just for a few hours.
Yeah. So therefore, if you have a shtar like this that was lost, that was lost and found, it's a very slim chance that it was already paid off and therefore that you shouldn't return it. Is it possible? It's possible, but that's why Rabbi Yochanan has to tell us that you can't use it again. But it's unusual enough for a shtar that's still valid to be lost.
It's impossible.
Fine, but it's unlikely enough that we don't have to worry about it. Rav Kahana amak shechayev moida. Rav Kahana says, this that we say you should return it is talking about when the loiva admits that it's still valid, that it hasn't been paid yet. Okay, the question is, Yochi Maila Memra, fine, then what's the Chiddush?
Right.
The answer is, Mao Detema Hai Mifra Pare, because you might say, maybe indeed he paid it off. The fact that he's saying, I didn't pay it, not because of Pnunia, but because of a different consideration. Mishim de Kabori Merder, because he wants to reuse it, he wants to use it again to borrow, because as we learned yesterday, the loiva is responsible to pay the sofer for the shtar, so he wants to save on the sofer's fee. I borrowed
him.
What?
He
borrows from the malver in the morning. He pays him off later that day. Now he wants to use it again, figuring, okay, I'll give it back to the malveh again, I'll save the money that it would have cost for a sofer.
It's the same day, so
yeah.
It's an advantage.
So why are we not worried about that? To Mashmalon, the chiddush is that we're not worried about that scenario, and therefore we can return it to the malveh and assume that it still is a valid shtar. Gim kein, because if it was something like that, malveh gufa leshavak, the malveh himself would not want to allow the loiva to do something like that. Because the malva will figure, Shami bi Rabbanan, that Rabbanan may hear what happened, that the shtar was already used one time and therefore expired. Well, Maskidile, and they're going to make me lose out. I'm not going to have my shibur. They're going to cancel the shibur of the shtar, or again, according to the Lavosh, it'll be completely possible shtar, but whatever. The point is that the malva is not going to allow the loiva to do something like that. He'll tell the loiva, you want to borrow from me again, go pay out money to the sofer and write a new shtar.
So what is he going to do? He's going to rip the shtar?
He'll rip the shtar up and write a new one, yeah. The malveh, yeah. Okay.
question is, my shnom hodetzan, fine, why is it any different than what we learned back in the Mishnah? Wait, motzah shtorichoy, going all the way back to the Mishnah now, that you find shtorichoy, in yeshbein achrayus nechasim layachse, we said that if there's achrayus, if there's a shibur on tarik written in it, you should not return it. And the first thing we said in the Gemara over there, at least according to Rav Asi, is that it's a case where the loiva admits that it's still a valid shtar, but he actually borrowed with it and he didn't pay it off yet. That the concern is he might have written it intending to borrow a nissen, not actually borrowed with it till Tishrei, and now the malva is going to come take away from lekuchas improperly, because Rashi says that we're not going according to the opinion over here that Eidav Bachasum of Zachim. We remember we had the opinion of Abaye over there that as soon as the shtar is signed, it's valid, but we're not holding according to that opinion over here for purposes of the Gemara. Now, there we don't say that if he wrote it in Nissan and doesn't end up borrowing until Tishrei, the Malva is not going to allow it because it's going to mess up his shibur. So why not? If we're saying that in general the Malva is concerned about such a thing, then fine, there's never a problem. If the lawyer brings a shtar, it's written, said that was written 6 months ago, he would be very concerned. He's not going to allow him to borrow with it. Yeah. He would say, I'm not going to lend you money on this shtar. Fine, you wrote that shtar 6 months ago. That doesn't help me. There's a possibility I'm ripping the shtar up and writing another one. Yeah. The lawyer can know Malva Gufala Shavik. We don't say over there that the Malva himself wouldn't allow such a thing to happen. Darmalik Sov Shtar Akrin of Tishrei, that he would tell him, write another shtar that's dated in Tishrei, the Domashami Rabbanon of Mafsidili, because if not, the Rabbanon are going to hear and ruin my Shibud, because they're going to say maybe the shtar was already paid off or whatever. What's the difference? Amri, so the answer, the difference is, Hasan should be Islay Rabcha. Yes, but on the other hand, there the Malva has a potential gain from it. Because if the shtar is thought to be valid, if the rabbanon don't catch on that there may have been a problem over here, then he'll gain because he'll be able to illegally take anything that lekuchas bought between nissen and tishrei. Because after all, the shtar is dated nissen, so therefore he'll find property that this guy sold a nissen e or sivan or whatever, and then go back and take it. So therefore, meinach michale. Therefore, he's fine with using this shtar that's 6 months old. V'loyom v'loymidi. He's not going to say anything because yes, on the one hand, he's standing a chance to lose his. On the one hand, he's standing a chance to lose his shibud completely. On the other hand, he gains that he has more potential shibud over there. So therefore, he's willing to take the risk. Ha'cha given to lesle rabcha, but over here, the malva has nothing to gain from it. The safe shtar ha'inaksi, because after all, the shtar is dated today. Either way, the shibud would only begin today anyway. Yeah. And so he's not gaining anything from it. Yeah. My ikur de katorif lekuchas.
One day he cannot claim.
Exactly. Anything that's so. Outside of your shalayim, they never wrote the hour on a shtar. In your shalayim, they used to write the time of day. In your shalayim, they used to write the time of day that shtar was written. Right. But everywhere else, they didn't do that. They only wrote the date.
The hour?
The time when the shtar was written. But everywhere else, they didn't do that. So therefore, there's nothing to gain. My ikur. So what is there? He's going to try to take away from lekuchas using a shtar that's already expired because the first shibud was already paid off. Lo shavik. He's not going to allow it. He has nothing to gain from it, and therefore he's not going to allow it. You want to save a couple of cents on the. You want to save a couple of bucks on the shtar. So I'm not going to take a chance. I'm losing my whole shibud where there's nothing to gain.
So when between 1 day and 6 months, when would he?
So
if he has enough time to collect,
if it's any older than 1 day, he may think that he has something to gain.
2 days.
Fine. And the fact is, the guy could have sold property yesterday. Eidim Chasum of Zachon was something that Abaye said earlier on Dr. Gimel, that as soon as the Eidim signed the shtar, already the shibud comes into effect, even if the loan didn't actually take place then. So according to him, this isn't this whole thing of Nissan to Tishrei isn't an issue. When the shtar is signed in Nissan, the shibud begins in Nissan anyway. But we're talking according to Ramasi, where that doesn't apply. Which is the halacha, by the way.
Yeah. When does shibud apply?
When the shibud just takes some into play, when the loan actually takes place. Unless it's a shtar haknah, as we talked about before. Amar Rav Chiya ba'Abba Amar Dichnan. Hatoyin acha ma'isa beisdin. If somebody makes a claim after Maisa Beis Din. So he claims that he paid it So he claims about a Maisa Beis Din that he paid it, meaning what does Maisa Beis Din mean? Rashi says, for example, Tznai Beis Din, the Ksuba, the fact that he has a Chiyuv, for example, that his estate has a Chiyuv to support his widow and his daughters, as we learned in Ksuvas, etc. If somebody claims without evidence, without Edim, that he paid it, we don't believe him. Loy Oma Klum, what he said doesn't count for anything. Yeah, we're talking about that. Tosfos talks about that. The Gemara is going to talk about over here. There's two possibilities. There were places where l'chatchila they didn't write a written ksuba. They just relied on the Tznai Beis Din. That was 200 for a psula, 100 for an almana, and therefore no ksuba was ever written. So one possibility is b'makom shein Tosfos says it's b'makom shein Tosfos ksuba, or for example, it is a place where they write a ksuba, but she has edim that it was burnt, for example. And then Tosfos goes on to say that actually, even where kosvin ksuba, even where she doesn't have, even if she doesn't have a ksuba, even if she doesn't bring out the ksuba right now, nevertheless, we don't believe him to say paraiti. We don't believe him to say paraiti.
He may not find her ksuba.
Yeah, whatever. But the point is, if she has to pay the ksuba, if she afterwards claims, if she takes out the ksuba again and says I paid it, he will be responsible to take out his receipt and say, look, I already paid it. Now that's the point of Tosfos. The Rambam learns differently. The Rambam and the Rif learn differently. That we're talking about over here, where we're talking about over here that b'makom shein kosvin ksuba. But Makum Shakos and Ksuba, if she doesn't have a Ksuba available, we would believe in that paraiti. But if not, bring out your Ksuba.
If
she loses it, then fine. You're responsible to get another one written. You're responsible to bring Adium that it wasn't paid off yet. Whatever. Okay. My timer. What's the reason? Call Maisa Beis Din. What's the reason why Hatoinach Maisa Beis Din doesn't work? Why not? Because call my
call
Maisa Beis Din commander knock at shtarah b'yodei dami. Whenever you have a Maisa Beis Din, whenever you have like a ksuba or whatever, it's as if the person was holding on to a shtar. So therefore, you can't claim paraiti against the other guy having a shtar.
Yeah.
For example, in the case of the ksuba, even if the wife does not have an actual written ksuba, like Tosfos says, no ksuba was ever written or it was burnt or what have you, the fact that it's as if she had a shtar in her hand, and therefore he can't claim paraiti against that she has a shtar. She effectively has a shtar.
In a place where they don't write ksubas.
In a place where they don't write, or again where they do and it was burnt, etc. So Rav Chiya Ba'aba asks Rav Yechanan of Loi Mishnah Seinu Rizu. What's the chiddush of what you're saying? Don't we learn that in a Mishnah? The Mishnah says, we learned this at Ksubas, Hotziya get ve'enim a ksuba, that if the woman brings out a get, but she doesn't have a ksuba to go along with it, goiva ksubasa, she can collect her ksuba on that basis. So there you go. She doesn't have a written ksuba, and yet we allow her to collect on the basis that
that's
she has evidence.
That's the case where they don't write ksubas.
Wait. Amalei, so Rav Yechanan answers him, he loved the loy lochaspa. If I hadn't picked up the piece of earthenware for you, loy mashkachat maganisa tusa, you would not have found the pearl underneath it. It's a figure of speech. Tosfos says actually we don't mean earthenware literally. You don't usually find pearls under pieces of earthenware. Tosfos says it's a metaphor like the big flat stones or maybe the oyster shells or whatever that you have at the bottom of the ocean that you find pearls under. Like if I hadn't picked up for you, you wouldn't have found it. In other words, you wouldn't have realized on your own that that's what the Mishnah means, because as Abai is going to point out in a second, there's another possible way to understand the Mishnah. So now that I told you this din, then you realize that the Mishnah is actually hinting there. Why? So I'm gonna buy my magnus. So Abai says, what's the pearl over here? Where do you see that the Mishnah is? Where do you actually see that, like Rabbi Ba'aba says, the Mishnah is actually implying that? Dilma b'makom shein kosvin ksuba askinan. Maybe that Mishnah is only talking about in a place where they don't write a ksuba b'chlal to get hainu ksuba. So because then the get actually functions as a ksuba. Since there's no written ksuba, then therefore when she has a get, that demonstrates that she's now ready to collect her ksuba. That she's ready to collect her ksuba. Abba b'makom shein kosvin ksuba, but on the face of it, in a place where they write the ksuba, we should say ina kita ksuba gavya. If she if she's holding the ksuba in her hand, then she should be able to collect iloi loy gavya. And if she doesn't have an actual written ksuba, we would assume that she received it already. Yeah. So who says that? That's what the Mishnah means. Yeah.
The Mishnah was written with both possibilities in mind.
Yeah, it would seem so. The Mishnah may only be referring to one possibility. The Mishnah may only be referring to the case where there's no ksuba written. Therefore, the get itself functions as the equivalent of a ksuba to show. In other words, I am supposed to be receiving this amount that the chachamim were misakim for my ksuba. But maybe the Mishnah is, well, I'm not talking about a place where they write a written ksuba. By the way, the Ravid says an interesting thing. Why would there have been places where they didn't write a ksuba anyway? He says because these may have been places where there's not really any B'nai Torah who know how to write a proper ksuba al pi'alacha. Therefore, the local based in the local Rabbanim may have made a fakana for them. Don't write a ksuba. Don't take a chance of writing it wrong. Anyway, Tosis, by the way, discusses over here that there may be a difference in this regard. The Bechlal Tosa says, given that without a ksuba, the guy can't even claim paraisi, as Rebbechim is saying, why would you bother writing a ksuba at all? And Tosa says, okay, maybe not because of 100 or 200, but because of the Tosa's ksuba. If nothing else, that has to be written. That's not Takana Sechamim. Okay. Anyway, Tosa's ksuba is an extra amount. In present day ksubas, you can find, you know, that you write, you know, your 100 or 200 as you're entitled to with Minat Torah, and then we continue in the ksuba. The chotan has a three chotan nam. The chotan has agreed that he added another 200 with skukin kesset saruf. Yeah. Hoder Amar Abaya. Then Abaya thought it over and said, "Lav milsi hidamri." Actually, what I said, this objection that maybe the Mishnah is only talking about a place where they don't write a ksuba, is not really correct. Because if you're going to say that, like I was thinking, that in a place where they write a ksuba, if she doesn't have a ksuba in her hand, he would be able to claim paraiti. So if you're going to say and that the Mishnah is only talking about a place where they don't usually write a ksuba, but in a place where they write it, if you're going to say in the kitchen ksuba gavya, iloila gavya, if you're going to say that only if she's holding a ksuba in her hand is she entitled to collect, and if not, then not, the problem with that logic is almana mina edersin mamai gavya. Think of it. And almana mina edersin, if they only did edersin, they didn't yet do nitsuin, and then her husband passed away, mamai gavya, how is she supposed to collect her ksuba? It must be the edim misafal. Fine, she brings edim that her husband is dead. The problem with that is lita and vilema paraite. Why can't the Yodish be able to claim that it was paid off? V'chitema hochinami, and you might answer, okay, yes, the Yodish is able to claim that he paid it off. The problem is
that's something I've divorced before, but they're still almana.
No, she's an almana. That's what we're talking about.
Right, it's happened now. So
yeah, so let's say, for example, okay, again, you know, who's his Yodish? If they had children, it's her children. If they didn't have children, then it's his brothers. It's, you know, it's his uncles, so whatever.
Paid off.
Whoever it was, it took over the estate. Yeah. The problem with that, if you're going to say that we believe them without any proof, to say, because after all, the point is that if the Gemara is assuming at this point, which now the Gemara is going to start taking up that point, we'll get to it tomorrow, Beis Hashem. The Gemara is assuming at this point that an almana min ha'erusin is entitled to the value of the ksuba, the 100 or 200. On the other hand, it's not written yet. The ksuba is not written like nowadays until the nisuin. So that's the problem. In other words, by definition, when she's an almana min ha'erusin, she doesn't have a written ksuba. If you're going to say that without a written ksuba, we believe them to say paraiti, imken ma'ha'ilu chachamim v'takanasa, then what did the chachamim accomplish with their takana? Why even bother making the takana that an arusa is entitled to a ksuba if it's so easy for the yorshim to just claim that we paid it and be able to get away with it? Okay, so
who said that?
That's Abaya saying, therefore, on that basis, we can't use my logic that there must be a difference between Makam Shekhoz Fiksuba and Makam Shein Khoz Fiksuba, because an Amon Amin Eirusin is effectively always the equivalent of Ein Khoz Fiksuba, and yet she has the ability to collect her Ksuba without the Yoshim just being able to claim Paraiti and get away with it. Evidently, that shows that even without a written Ksuba, you don't believe the husband or the Yoshim to claim paraiti. No, once we say that, then there's no reason to think that it would be different in any other case. So we'll continue with the discussion tomorrow, Baz Hashem, because the Gemara is first going to have to deal with the Gemara is first going to have to deal with what how do we know? As Abaye is taking it as a given that an Almona Min HaEdusin is entitled to a Ksuba. Where do you get that from? Where's the proof? So that's the first thing the Gemara is going to take up tomorrow.
So there's no counter proof.
And then, yeah, well, that's the, we have to bring a proof.